working out of?
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
All right, let's go here. It's the Brock and Salk Show on, where are we? Oh, yeah, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, and the Seattle Sports application. It's a formal Friday. We're on the podcast platforms as well. Glad you're with us here on this beautiful, beautiful Friday heading into what should be an awesome weekend. We are just 6 days away from the draft, just 6 days away from the big race. Moore and I will be racing. It sounds like we've got a venue, Justin. Is that right? We've locked down a venue for the race now?
We are getting very close to securing it.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But,
final negotiations.
I don't want to jinx anything in the last, you know.
Right.
And then the
nothing's done until it's signed, sealed, and delivered.
Exactly. Okay. So I'm talking to somebody today.
Good. Okay. Well, so that should get locked down by the end of the day.
Sorry that that's become your job.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. But
Brock's like, here, Justin, email these people.
Justin, make this happen. I started stretching my hamstrings last night, so I should be fine. I'm ready to go.
Well, that's all you need.
That's all you need is just one.
Just want to stretch the hamstrings a little bit. I mean, I'll be doing it for the rest of the week, obviously, leading up to Thursday.
Is that the advice Michael Johnson gave you?
Yeah, Michael got right back to me, as I'm sure you'd imagine. I also watched him last night win a 200. So 200 does have a staggered start.
Right, yeah.
Do you have
to make sure we had a track?
Also, there's not seven or eight races.
No, but there's two. You got, because it's a significant difference. Do you have a preference inside or outside? Do you want to start like ahead or do you want to start behind?
I'll beat you either way. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Well, then you can start ahead. I'll start behind. That sounds great. I would like to
chase down versus.
Yeah, I'd like to be the chaser rather than the chasee, if you don't mind. So that sounds great. Okay, good. All right, great. All right, so that's settled. All right, you guys want to start with something positive today? I feel like sometimes we start the show negative.
Yeah, then we don't have enough time for the positive,
right.
So let's go.
I come on, I rant, I rave. Have you ever really just raved? I don't know. But I come on, rant and rave sometimes. I'm mad, I'm frustrated. I thought
You've
I would
raved about Luis Castillo before.
That's true. I guess raving is actually kind of a positive. So it's weird. When you rant and rave, it's supposed to be all negative. But that really should be a mix of everything. All right, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to start off with something positive today. What is the single best Mariner story / development of the first 3 weeks? I'll give you the answer because I don't think it's close. I don't think it is close at all what the number one best story is of the first 3 weeks of this season. Got any guesses? Top of your head?
I'm starting pitching.
It's Bryce Miller, specifically.
Okay.
Starting pitching is kind of, you know.
It's like seven in a row is pretty hard to.
It's ridiculous, but that's what they're going to do. That's what you want out of this team. That's kind of what you're expecting. For me, by far, the best Mariner development of the first 3 weeks has been the evolution of Bryce Miller. Bryce Miller, first of all, a year ago was not on the roster. Think about that. A year ago, Bryce Miller, not on the roster. We didn't really know who he was. It wasn't until, you know, a couple weeks into the season, he ends up getting called up, right, and kind of does his thing against the A's and a few other teams. And you're like, oh, my gosh, this guy's a revelation. But if you watched him carefully, especially into the end of last year, there were some concerns about Bryce Miller. Clearly, he was a guy who could get righties out. He had two very obvious pitches, right? He has a dynamic fastball and a really good slider, and you're like, okay, this guy might be a starter. He might be a really good high-leverage reliever. We'll see. And over the course of the season, you kind of saw maybe some signs of both. And lefties certainly got to him at times. He would have a lot of trouble getting deep into games. He had some trouble putting away hitters, especially lefties, because he just didn't have a legit way to get them out. The two-seamer was iffy. There was no real changeup that was working specifically against lefties. And so you head into this year, and there was a lot of debate. Do you trade Bryce Miller? Do you trade Brian Wu? Who's, you know, going to be the better pitcher? Does one move to the bullpen if you were to sign somebody? And the consensus was, hey, if someone's moving to the bullpen, probably going to be Bryce Miller. Because he had yet to really develop that other pitch, and because there's a lot of concern about Wu kind of changing up his routine and the injury history, and he'd never really done it before. Bryce Miller has. So that's kind of where you're at heading into the season. First start, okay. Second start, better. Third start, dominant. Fourth start, dominant. You look at Bryce Miller today, three out of his four have been quality starts. He leads the team in ERA, sub two, by the way, 1.85. Big stat for me, he's averaging 6 innings per start, which means he's getting deeper into the game as, you know, a second year player and, you know, not forcing the bullpen to pick up the slack. He knows it. He knows that's big.
Six and bullpen only has to cover 3 innings. So it's big. You know, if you're getting through six, you're being efficient and the game should be moving on. And like getting the offense back out there is, you know, as quick as I can and not having them stand around is big. So
he's doing what he needs to do. He's getting deeper into the games, which means he's finding ways to, yeah, he's striking guys out. Still nearly 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. It's not like he's not striking but batters out, but he's also finding ways to get out of those counts earlier. And the two-seamer has been a big part of that, using both of his fastballs, as he's mentioned.
Like I said last week, like, I'm really happy with where the sinker is as well. So, like, just having both of those, they, you know, those two pair well together and they work. So whenever I'm locating those, like, I'll have success with those, and then you add in the other stuff, and it's got potential.
Yeah, you look at where he's at now. Remember he told us in the offseason, or maybe right at the beginning of spring training, that he had started throwing a splitter this offseason, right, to go with the two-seamer that he introduced last year, and by my count seems to have really, I don't want to say perfected, but enhanced significantly so far this season based on what we saw last year. He goes from being potentially a two-pitch reliever to being a 4 or 5 pitch starter. It's a huge difference. It's a humongous difference. A guy who's now coming at you with a 4-seam fastball, a 2-seam fastball, sinker essentially, that can get lefties out and get guys to roll over, and then both the slider, which he's obviously had, and the splitter. Now you're a complete pitcher. Now you're a complete starting pitcher who can get righties and lefties out. Now you're a guy who can go six innings deep into a game, right? Those things are incredibly important for the Mariners' rotation, to the point where now you're looking at him as being just another one of the guys, as opposed to a young pitcher that you've got to kind of help through a situation, that you've got to guide through his start and make sure that, you know, you can kind of coax 5 innings out of him like you would with a fifth starter, like you are with Emerson Hancock right now. He's not in that category. He's not pitched like that at all. And he knows that a big part of that was getting the lefties out.
That was my goal this offseason, you know, find a way to attack lefties. And I'm happy with where we're at.
There you go. So I think that's your best development so far of this Mariners season.
I remember in one of the around the weekends I was doing, after I think maybe his first or second start, I was like, yeah, you'd like to see him go a little deeper into the game since they, you know, are waiting for the bullpen to get fully healthy. Mm-hmm. And you were like, yeah, that's just not what we can really expect from him. And but yeah, I guess all that work that he did this offseason, he really had that goal in mind. It's cool to see, too, that he wasn't just like, oh, I'm trying to add new pitches, because some of the guys do that.
Right.
Like, it seems like he had a clear plan of how he wanted to use those to get deeper.
Here's my weakness. Here's how I'm going to fix it. Because remember, we've talked about this before. Always try to enhance your strengths rather than fix your weaknesses, unless you have a fatal flaw. And that's the key thing there, right? Getting lefties out was a fatal flaw.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to potentially keep Bryce Miller from being certainly a dominant starter and maybe a starter at all long term. There was a possibility he's going to become a bullpen arm if he doesn't have the opportunity, if he doesn't fix that, essentially. And he did. He goes, at least so far. I mean, I know it's only been 4 games, but it is certainly tracking in that direction, that he's now shown what he can do to righties and lefties alike. It gets him deeper into the game. It gets them what they need out of what is still their fourth starter. He's not pitching like a fourth starter so far this year. He's pitching like a dominant kind of pitcher. Another guy that you're rolling out one after another after another. And that's a good sign for the future. It's not going to fix some of the problems that ail the Mariners. It's not the end-all, be-all. but it is certainly the best positive sign I think we've seen through the first 3 weeks of this season. So hopefully that keeps up. Where does the salmon run rank on that list? You know, that's a good question. In terms of positive Mariner development, Salmon Run probably just behind. Probably number two.
Oh, well, you're forgetting the double Mitchwich.
That's three. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, yeah, we'll go double Mitchwich ahead. Some people kind of frustrated with the double Mitchwich and the fact that they say it's just not, it's difficult to mass produce.
I could see, well, yeah.
That some of the challenges plating it when you're mass producing it have maybe inhibited the quality. The quality control element of all the Mitchwiches. So I don't know. I've only had the one. The one I had was pretty darn spectacular. So that's all I can say. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, give you guys everything you need to know, including the continuation, day three of a big time scandal. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
All right, Picturegate enters its third day as others learned about it, and John Schneider spoke about it yesterday. So let's remind everybody they did remove some pictures from the walls at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center where the Seahawks practice, and I think it's the right call. It's an opportunity to allow this current group to write its own story rather than to be beholden to their recent predecessors. I love it. John Schneider on with Wyman and Bob yesterday.
Celebrating our history is like all over this building, and so we're actually going... We're going a little more digital, too, so we're like, we're going to have, you know, these things are like kind of falling apart off the walls here and stuff, too. So we're going more digital. We're going to have TVs up. I was talking to Chuck about it this morning, actually. Like TVs up and just kind of like celebrating the Dave Wyman tackles, if you will, or the face masks and the whole, you know, the Kurt Warner runs and the Sean Alexanders and the Coach Holmgrens and the Coach Carrolls and the whole thing. But, you know, right when you walk around the corner from the indoor facility, I mean, we have, you know, the plates of every player that's played here and the pictures from all the guys, like more recent guys and all that. So, and really in Mike's mind, it's kind of a, hey, like, we're celebrating history, guys, get that, but we're like, we're gonna make up our own. We're not coming in here with like certain slogans and, you know, leadership mottos and that sort of thing. We're gonna build our own as a team.
Yeah, and I think that's a very specific, when he says slogans and leadership models, that's a reference, I would think, to Pete Carroll. Hey, man, we're not coming in here with always compete. We're not coming in here with competition Tuesday and, you know, whatever else. Like, that's not what we're doing. This is a new regime that has going to make its own way in the world, and I think it absolutely needs to do that. Kudos to Mike McDonald. Kudos to John Schneider. And by the way, they ran it through the players.
And so I think the players really embraced it. And, you know, listening to Leo the other day, you know, said it great. Like, hey, we're totally going to respect the past and everything that's happened here. And, you know, we got to just got to move forward. You know, it's a young franchise, 1976.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're in those other franchises, like there's areas that, you know, they have a kind of a Hall of Fame area or and then they're celebrating they're kind of building their own story as they go. I think we did it with Coach McCarthy in Green Bay, too. Like, hey, this is a special area. Let's build our own history. And that's basically it.
I think that's exactly how they should be handling it. I love it. I think this is an A-plus so far on the part of the Seahawks. Okay, let me play you something because it fits into a category. This is Nolan Teasley, who's the assistant GM, new assistant GM, right? Here's what he said yesterday in the pre-draft press conference about free agency and pay special attention to the quarterback element.
The goal during free agency is really it's been tried and true and year after year that's not how you build, right? It's an opportunity to supplement your roster, and that was the goal, including the Sam Howell trade, is to supplement our roster and get to a point where we don't really feel like we need to force anything and all options are on the table.
Okay, why does everyone keep saying this? Is this a talking point?
It's trying almost like they want you to speculate.
Yeah. Right. Do they want me to speculate on whether or not the Seahawks would take a quarterback to force other teams to draft quarterbacks ahead of the Seahawks to get better players to roll down to them at 16? Or is this legit? Are they serious saying, hey, look, it's on the table. Yeah, if the right quarterback's there at 16, we could absolutely do that. Or maybe in the second round if they were to trade back into it. Color me curious. I don't know what the real goal is, but definitely I would consider myself very curious on what the Seahawks' real intentions are at quarterback.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, time now for the Mariners to build on this week's success. We'll get after it tonight. In Colorado for three straight, Emerson Hancock will start things off. Castillo and Kirby to follow. That's kind of the warm-up series before their first head-to-head meeting with Texas in Dallas next week. It'll be Gilbert, Miller, and Hancock scheduled there. By the way, they do have an off day Monday. If they did want to give Castillo that last start instead of Hancock against the top team in the division, they could. I don't think they will. I think every opportunity to take an extra day off right now for every pitcher, given all the injuries around the league, I think you kind of want to take it, but it is an option if they were to want to do that. Rangers win last night, so they're now a game and a half up on the Mariners. Angels lose, so they fall back into a tie with the Mariners for second place. Why have the Mariners been able to sustain some cold hitting? Because of their pitching, as John Morosi knows.
The Mariner rotation has walked the fewest batters of any rotation in Major League Baseball this year, and they also have struck out, I believe, the second most. And so that dichotomy, bunch of strikeouts, very low walks, that will play over the big 6 months of the regular season. That is going to show up and improve. I really believe that Castillo and Kirby have both thrown the ball better than what their ERAs indicate. This is the ultimate small sample size time of year. So I agree. I think Hancock has done more than a capable job of being the fifth starter in place of Brian Wu. And in Seattle, in this way, their DNA remains intact. This is a rotation-dependent team.
Yeah, and when their rotation does what it's done here for the last week, which is seven straight quality starts, you go 5-2, which is exactly what they did.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Oh, man, the Kraken season mercifully came to an end last night. A rare 4-3 win over the Wild. Couple of goals for Yanni Gourde, plus one each for Cartier and Beniers. They finished with 81 points in the standings. That is eighth worst in the league, so they have about a 6% chance of winning the draft lottery. Beniers, with that goal, ended up with 15 goals, 22 assists for the season. Yikes. He was also a minus 20 when he was on the ice. So just remember, plus minus is you get a plus when a goal is scored while you're on the ice. You get a minus when a goal is scored when you're on the ice. Only on 5-on-5. Doesn't count when you're on the power play or the penalty kill. But minus 20 for your defensive-minded top center who only had 37 points on the year. Connor McDavid's going to finish with over 100 assists. You had 37 points. That is not a good season for Beniers, not a good season for them as a team at all. So now what do? Because season's over, you cannot just run this back. You cannot just make subtle changes and think that that's going to be a difference in the next season, right? You're going to need some kind of big change, whether it's behind the bench with a new coach or on the ice with some new players. But this was not a matter of some injuries or some bad luck or anything like that. This is a team that just flat out wasn't good enough. So curious to see what changes they have in store. All right, that's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. I am told we have some sound, which we'll get to a little bit later, of John Schneider weighing in on who is going to win the race on Thursday. Obviously, that's the thing he's most consumed with for Thursday.
Clearly.
I can't believe this. Yeah.
There's nothing else he should be thinking about.
Right. I mean, that's going to be a big day for him. I'm sure he'll be checking in, maybe even coming out to the race. Who knows? Just to see how it goes. He doesn't have anything to do, so why not check and see who's going to win this sucker?
Should we save that?
Huh?
Should we wait?
Yeah, we don't have time
that?
Now, but we'll get to that. I want Brock to hear it. I think he deserves that. So we'll wait till 7 o'clock. G. Scott's going to be in a little early at 7:30 today. I know he's anxious to talk about some of the changes at the facility. Plus, apparently Taylor Swift's new album, which I listened to last night, right at 9 o'clock when it dropped. And then I found out there's a whole second album that came out after I went to bed. So
what's that look like? Do you guys have like a stereo set up in the house? You just
Sonos.
Put a phone out?
Sonos.
Okay.
Yeah, we Spotify'd a Sonos and listened in our living room as a whole family. Gertie was asleep, but the rest of us were very interested.
It's classic.
It's kind of weepy. I thought it was kind of a weepy album considering how great her life's been. She's had like the greatest life in the history of history over the last year. I thought maybe it'd be a little bit more upbeat, a little more pop, but it's a little more weepy. It's a little more Adele-like. It's good, by the way. I thought it was really good. It's impressive. She's a great songwriter.
But there aren't any like big upbeat bangers that we're going to be hearing.
Not on the first half. I didn't hear a lot of upbeat bangers, but maybe there's some on the second. We'll see. Okay. I don't know. I haven't listened to that part yet. Avery was very excited, and we had a great time listening as a family. And tonight, Justin, We're going to the Laser Light Show, Tortured Poets Department edition at the Pacific Science Center.
They've already put one together for
one
the
night
album?
Only. They're doing it live. Whoa. Like Bill O'Reilly. You know what?
Yeah, we'll do it live. I'll write it,
and we'll do it live. That's what we're going to go see tonight. All
play
right.
us out.
Booger McFarland's got himself quite the opinion on what the Seahawks should do at number 16, and it's not a name we've brought up probably nearly enough. It's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports App.
Yeah, 1 week from tonight, the Seahawks get ready to pick at number 16. Not the only thing going on next Thursday. Of course, Moore and I are going to be doing battle at a local track. We're still working out which one. Maybe at UW, might be in West Seattle. I'm not sure yet, but we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
Do you think we can sell tickets?
Huh?
We could sell tickets.
Why? Why would anybody pay to watch us run around a track? I don't think that makes a very.
You don't think so?
No. I don't think that makes a tremendous amount of sense. Let's chat with Booger McFarland instead. Booger, good morning. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here a week before the draft.
Well, first of all, I think I would pay a little money to see Brock run. I mean,
No. I'm not running. No, the last time I ran, I got a lot of Steven Seagal. Like, no, not doing that. No, Salk and our producer, Maura, are going to have a little run.
200 meters.
Yeah. Yeah. When was the last time Booger McFarland sprinted? I know you're a Peloton czar. I know you two are in great shape, but when was the last time you full on 100% stepped on the gas, full tilt sprint?
Oh, it's been at least 15 years, and that'll probably be the last time if I can help. But the only time I'm going to sprint now is if somebody says run, they're shooting, then that's the only time I'm going to take off running. Other than that, buddy, I'm going to get on a bike, and I'm going to ride my bike until the day the good Lord calls me home.
Love it. Better on the knees.
Yep.
No question. But, I mean, you know, Brock puts these nice suits on. He looks athletic. He's standing on the sideline. He's got the nice hair, and he's got the eyes, and he's well-dressed. But underneath there, I just wonder if they're still an athlete.
Mm-mm. I wasn't sure, and then one day I worked out with Brock because I'd always made fun of him, like, oh, you know, backup quarterback, clipboard holder, ha-ha. And then one day I worked out with him, and I was like, oh, that's what a professional athlete's like. That's not just a regular schlub like me. That's a difference between the radio host and a professional athlete. So I don't know. I think he's still got a little something, Booger. I don't know.
Been a long time, but enough about me.
Let's talk more about you.
Talk about the real studs. They're going to get drafted in 7 days. And, Booger, we were listening to some sound of you earlier in the week talking about these offense. We'll start with the offensive line. We'll get to the defensive lineman as well. But do you feel like in your years of covering these drafts that this is one of the deeper offensive lines and just groups overall that you've covered?
Yeah, no question. You know, there's usually always one or two guys where you say, okay, this is the guy I can come in and be a plug-and-play guy. I mean, there's upwards of, I think, at least six that are going to go in the first round, maybe eight. I mean, it is a deep offensive line class. It's kind of the pick of the flavor. You want left tackles, we can get Joe Alt and Olu Fashanu. If you want right tackles, you can get J.C. Latham and Talisi Fuaga. Like, there's so many different guys that you're looking for. If you're looking for projects, what about Amarius Mims, who might be the biggest project in the draft? However, all the traits are there. I mean, he's 6'8", I mean, 320 pounds, and he looks like he could play like tight end for somebody. I mean, that's how slender and athletic he looks. So this is the as deeper crop of tackles that I think we've seen. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're a team and you're unsure about a position that you need, I think you're going to see a lot of guys that just take the offensive tackle and say, I feel really good about getting one of the top players in this draft. Because if you think about this, if there are five quarterbacks that go in the first round and there are at least six receivers that are projected to go in the first round, so that's 11, and then you get 6 to 8 offensive tackles, I mean, that's upwards of 17 to 19 guys. It's only 32 picks in the first round. So then you throw in Brock Bowers, you throw in a couple of edge guys, and before you know it, the first round is done.
How do you judge linemen? What are you looking for in big people in 2024?
I think you have to be able to have athleticism and movement. No longer are you looking for guys that cannot move. you know, the days of, well, he's a left tackle, he's a right tackle. Well, both tackles are important right now. Just look at what Philadelphia has done with their two stud tackles up there. And so you have to have two guys that can protect the passer, regardless of whether the quarterback left-handed or right-handed, like it doesn't matter. I'm looking for arm length. I'm looking for athleticism. Can he bend? Can he move? Can he change directions? Like, you can't be a guy that can just go forward and not be able to hit the reverse and go side to side. And so I think those are the traits you look for. And then if you have a coach who's worth a grain of salt, he can teach whatever technique he wants. But you have to have the ingredients to be able to make whatever that coach is looking for. So those are some of the traits you look for.
Booger McFarland here with us from ESPN. You'll see him all over their draft coverage and all over all of their football coverage come the fall as well. Booger, what about on the interior? If those are the tackles, and then we've got a guy here in our backyard that is an amazing tackle, Troy Fautanu, that some are projecting could be an amazing guard as well. What do you feel about the interior offensive lineman in this draft?
You're right. Fautanu is a guy who most people are projecting him to go inside, just like they're projecting the guy from Duke, Graham Barton, to go inside. You got the kid from Oregon, Jackson Powers Johnson. You got the center from West Virginia and Zach Frazier. Like, those are the top guys that most people say that are going to go inside. And to me, those guys got to be nasty. Like, you talk about what you look for in a tackle. You're looking for that athleticism, that length, that movement. When I get guys inside down where I play, like, the traits are cool. And I want a guy that's kind of built like a block. But I need guys that are nasty, because ultimately, sometimes you can't have the proper technique. You just got to move a man against his will. And in order to do that, you got to be a little nasty. So all those guys you and I mentioned, I think, are going to be some of the first guys to go off the board. You know, it's not necessarily a bumper crop for guards. Mm-hmm. I think there are more centers in this draft. When you talk about, you know, JPJ, you talk about Frazier, Tanner Bordellini, some guys that could go inside. For Tanu, I think if you ask me who would be the top guard in the draft, you know, it's almost like when Zach Martin came out of Notre Dame. That's the comparison people always make, right? Or Brandon Scherff when he came out of Iowa. The guys that play tackle, that kicked inside the guard. You know, Zach Martin has had a Hall of Fame career. Brandon Scherff has been really good, made a lot of money. You can always fall back and put guys inside. I think it's tougher to find those tackles. That's why tackles go a little bit higher, usually, than the guards.
Okay, how nasty does it really get in there? Who are a couple of the guys that were the most nasty that you just hated or you despised or, frankly, you loved going against because you knew it was just going to be a brawl?
Yeah, man. I mean, a guy like Larry Allen. I caught Larry Allen toward the end of his career. Oof. Kevin Gogan. Guys that were just nasty. Jari Evans with the Saints. LaCharles Bentley, who we used to go against all the time. Like, those are the guys that were just super nasty, man. Like, sometimes it doesn't matter, you know, what the play call. Literally, we would line up because we played the Saints so many times. Like, I knew their plays. They kind of knew what we were doing. So it came down to who was going to be the craftiest and the nastiest and get the job done. Those were the battles that I love, man, because there was no tricking each other. It was just, hey, we're going to line up and we're going to battle. And when the horn blows zero, we're going to shake hands. And I respect you. You respect me. The battle that I really enjoyed the most over my career was the center for the Bears, Olin Krutz, because he understood how difficult it was to play my position. And I understood how difficult it was to do what he did, because he used to always tell me, he said, I tell my offensive line coach every day, how the hell do you want this guy, who's a better athlete than me, to line up on my outside shoulder, and you want me to get in front of him on the opposite side? He said, it's impossible. It's almost like trying to outrun, you know, back in the day, Ben Johnson. Like you just can't do it. He was like, and I would battle with him on, and he would just tell me, yep, you got to get it done. You got to get it done. So, like, those were the battles, and I think that's my battle that when I look back on it, it's the one that I cherish the most. And he and I, every time we see each other, we kind of talk about that one.
Well, first of all, you couldn't outrun Ben Johnson. He was, you know, roided out of his mind. Second of all, I don't blame you for saying Olin Krutz. Based on the stories Brock has told me about Olin, if you don't say him, there's a decent chance he's going to track you down and fight you. So, like, I think you've done the right thing and just protected yourself moving forward.
Well, that's the nastiness that you got to have. I mean, Olin Krutz was one of the better centers that I ever played against. Now, you know, he's kind of fringe as far as being worthy of the Hall of Fame, but if you look at the guys that I played against, and I got Dermani at the end of his career, but as far as the guys that I played against, Stepnoski with the Cowboys, Olin Cruz, like those guys were just and it didn't matter the body type. Like Stepnoski wasn't a huge guy. He was probably 280, 290. But you talk about the athleticism and tenacity and the understanding leverage. He was amazing.
So tell me about Feltano, who, you know, when we look through these mock drafts, there are about 1,000 of them. He's probably not, it's not been a majority of the mocks that have put him to Seattle, but probably a plurality. Mm. There have been more mocks that put him here than anybody else. Tell me what we should know about Troy Feltano.
Well, I just think, first of all, just the tenacity in which he plays with. You know, I don't care about, I mean, yeah, he's big enough, the arm length, all that good stuff, but I just like his ability to be an athlete and to be nasty. You know, he's a guy that if you told me I could knock 15, 20 pounds off of him, he could play defensive tackle. Like, that's the kind of athleticism that he has. And you put that at guard, so you talk about the ability to move him in, to climb to the second level, to be nasty, to bring an attitude when he gets there. I think when you talk to some of the coaches around the league, that's the biggest thing that they say, man, this guy, not only does he have the traits, but he just plays nasty and with an attitude. And when you get that kind of guy, you know, we always hear about, hey, he's a tone setter. So what exactly does that mean? That means that's a guy that after the first play and the play is over, he's going to be the last guy that's pushing or hitting somebody. Like, he's going to set the tone of how we're going to play and what our team is going to look like that day. And you got to have that up front. If you don't have that on your offensive line, that's when your team gets called soft.
Yes. Yep, and that's been, I think, a challenge at times over the last 15 years here in Seattle. I don't know necessarily soft, but just consistent. Booger McFarland here, always consistent with us. Let's flip sides now to the other side of the line. Because, as you mentioned, there are going to be a bunch of QBs that go. There are going to be a bunch of tackles that go. There are going to be a bunch of receivers that go. I don't even know who the first defensive player is off of the board, but if Booger McFarland is picking the single best defensive player in this draft, who is he?
Leiatu Latu from UCLA. And I know about the medical, and I'm sure you guys know about that. Medically retired, the neck, has the surgery, comes back, has played the last 2 years at UCLA. But if you're asking me that, health withstanding, a guy that's going to make the biggest impact in the league, I think it's him, because I think he's NFL ready, meaning he understands pass rush, understands leverage, angles, how to use his hands. He's got some moves. He's not just an athlete running around a corner. I think his production is there. If you go back and look at his production at UCLA the last 2 years, and the tape stands out. And so I just don't know what teams are going to say, we're good with the neck. Mm-hmm. Because there's a reason he was medically retired. I'm sure you guys probably had a ton of conversation about this kid when he was up there.
Yeah.
But it's just some teams are going to be cool with it and some are not. And I think that's going to determine where he goes. I think Dallas Turner, the edge guy from Alabama, is going to be the first guy picked because he's got a clean bill of health. He ran 4.4. He's an edge guy. He's 6'3", 240, so he can play in space. He can rush. He can drop. He can cover. Like, he's what I call that hybrid, where football is going to. You know, there was a point in time, Brock, when you and I played where your defensive ends were 290. Mm-hmm. Defensive guys now that are setting the edge are 250, 260. Like, Myles Garrett is an outlier at 275, 280. Most of them look like T.J. Watt. They're long, they're slender, they can run. You can drop them if you need to. And I think Dallas Turner fits that mold. So I look for him. I don't think he gets past Atlanta at 8 because they haven't made a rush to passer since Chuck Smith left, I don't think. So they're definitely looking for pass rush.
How about Jared Verse?
Yeah, Verse is your quintessential power player, man. Maybe a little stiff, but who cares? The production is there. The production was there at Albany. It was there at Florida State. And, Brock, you'll love this comparison. It kind of reminds me of Cam Jordan, a guy that's going to, I think, be in the Hall of Fame. Mm. More of a power player, never going to run around you. But every year you look up, Cam Jordan has got 10 to 12 sacks, and he's played for, 12, 13 years? I think if I told you that Jared Verse would be that, I think everybody would line up to take him.
Okay, I got two last questions. Because defensive linemen, they know quarterbacks too. So they're some of the best guys to talk about quarterbacks, honestly, because they can feel,
really?
And they can sense.
We had Michael Bennett on. He just made fun of quarterbacks and said all they did was cry.
Well, Bennett was in his own world.
Okay.
He's still in his own world. I mean, you get, you know, someone like Boog that, you know, has a background studying them, watched them, feel. So if Michael Penix is sitting there, you taking Michael Penix in the first round?
you know, I think that he's going to be a first round pick. Just depends on where I'm picking. If I'm in the top 10, no, I don't think he's a top 10 player in this draft. If I'm picking 28 to 32 somewhere in there, yeah, I think I could take Michael Penix in this draft just because, you know, he's got the most liveliest arm, and you can explain to your host what that means, Brock. Like he's got an arm that it just look like when the ball comes off, it's different. Like it's different, and yeah. He can, you know, he maybe needs to work on some of the touch throws. That deep square in where he's got to layer it over that linebacker and in between that corner and that safety, like maybe he needs to work on that. But guess what? I mean, as long as he's got that fastball, I think we can work with the other things. I just don't know how you're going to judge two ACLs and two shoulder injuries. Do you say, well, he's a quarterback and eventually they're all going to get hurt? Because I truly believe that. Like, it's not if you get hurt, it's when. Everybody gets hurt in this league. So do you say he's already had his injuries and he's going to be clean for a while because he's been clean for a couple of years? Or do you say he's injury prone and his body just can't take it? I don't know how you look at it, but if we're just looking at the tape and the arm, he deserves to be a first-round pick.
Who do you think's, you know, as you look at this, and we're trying to figure out here in Seattle, it's the first time we've had a draft without Pete Carroll in forever. We're trying to figure out what fits what Mike McDonald wants to do based on what he's done in Michigan and maybe what he's done in Baltimore. Is there a player that you think fits his past, his scheme, et cetera?
Well, if you look at what they've done in Baltimore and you kind of look at what they've done in Seattle, like they like versatility, right? Like if you just think about, think about the Baltimore defense. You know, you think about a bunch of guys that are long and athletic, the 6'4 to 6'5, 250 to 260, the linebackers that are 225, 230 that can run. They took Kyle Hamilton, and he's a big athlete, and they made a position for him. And then if you think about what Pete has done and what Snyder has done up in Seattle, I mean, think about a guy like Bruce Irvin. You know, may not have fit a lot of places, but he fit really well up there. You think about Bennett. Think about Cam Chancellor, Browner, like some of the guys that they're just really athletic. They're big football players. They're athletic, not overly, like when I say big, they're not, you know, 260 backers or 310-pound defensive tackles. But what they are big athletes. And I think it wouldn't surprise me when you start looking at some of the guys that are athletic in this draft, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Like a guy like a Chop Robinson comes to mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chop 6'4", 240, ran 4'4". I mean, that sounds like a Snyder guy, doesn't it? Like, I mean, guy that could come in there, he could do some things. He definitely would fit in Baltimore, you know, when you look at how Baltimore wants to get after it. So it's going to depend. I do think this is going to be a defensive draft. If it's not an offensive lineman, I do think they're going defense in Seattle. But this draft's going to be fascinating, guys, because you don't know, you know, after the top, to me, I think it's going quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. And then what does Arizona do at 4? Do they stick and pick and take Neighbors or Harrison Jr., or do they trade out? Does Minnesota come up, package 11 and 23, and some other things, and come up to 4 and take J.J. McCarthy, who, oh, by the way, Brock, I don't see it. And maybe you can tell me I'm wrong, but I don't see it. And we can make all these excuses about – like, we can talk about, well, it's Harbaugh and the style he wants to play. Here's what I know. It would be hard for me to pick J.J. McCarthy at 4. And I haven't seen him do what I've seen the other three guys do. And here's what I mean by that, Brock. And then I'd love to hear your answer. Mm-hmm. I saw the other three guys at one point in their tenure in college be given the ball and go get it done. And they got it done when it didn't matter what the defense did. It didn't matter who was around them. They went out and they got it done. Now, for Caleb and Drake, it may have been in 22. For Jaden, it was in 23. I haven't seen J.J. do it, and that's the issue for me. Like I've seen, it's kind of like Bigfoot. Like, I heard about him, and I saw him here and there. I saw some shadows, but I haven't seen him consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would argue go watch the Ohio State games. And yes, it's a running defense, right? So you've got to put those glasses on and go, this is what they're asked to do. This is his team. It's the way it's built. It's running defense. But on third downs and in the fourth quarters, Dude was nails. Needed a drive against Alabama in the fourth quarter. Drove him down to win. Needed a third down conversion when everybody's sphincter for Michigan was getting really tight in the national title game in the third quarter. Scrambles for 25 yards. And just, you know, it's not volume. He doesn't have the volume, to your point. But there's those big, big moments. And the dude just elevated Jim Harbaugh and elevated Michigan, along with all of his buddies, to a national championship, which people don't understand this, but Bo never won one. Right, Bo Schembechler never, they'd won one in like 70 years until they got it done right this year. So, yeah, it's a great debate. It's going to make for a fascinating draft. Just answer me this one last question. I'm going to just, Booger, I'm just going to give you just flat out stats. Okay, we got two combatants going at it a week from today.
Stop.
One is 5'10", 195 pounds. You know, weight will fluctuate a little bit. He'll get down lean and mean, and then it'll fluctuate back up. He was a football player until he decided smoking cigarettes was more important at Pomona than being a football player. And on the other side, we have a track star from high school. Her coach called her a Tyrannobird. She's 6 foot. She's got 10.5-inch hands. She runs every day with her dog. Those two are going at it.
I
one
ran
week
distance,
from today.
Though. I didn't sprint.
Those two are going at it in a 220-meter race. Who you got?
6 feet. Wow. I mean, that sounds like, and don't take this the wrong way, but from an athletic standpoint, that sounds like an animal.
I'm 5'10", by the way.
Okay. I'm taking the more athletic person, so I'm taking her.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good.
Well, let's see where that goes. All right. Well, so then now that I know that's what you say, I'm going to obviously discount your answer to this final question. But fine. If you are sitting at 16 and you have your choice between Michael Penix, Jared Verse, Troy Fautanu, Lautu, Byron Murphy, and Chop Robinson, just because you mentioned his name, who are you taking?
Oh, at 16, I think the value is there for Lautu. At 16, I'd take him. If my defensive line coach could sway me into taking Murphy, I'd listen. I'd be okay. But if he says, "Hey, I want Lautu," I'm taking Lautu because I think the production and the impact will be immediate. It won't be I need to teach him how to play, because I think he's ready to play now. He's got to get a little stronger and all that good stuff, but. Again, all these guys are prospects. They're not ready to come in and be all pro players. They have tools, and it's going to be up to their coaches to refine those tools. I think Lautu has as good a tools as we've seen as an edge rusher coming into this league.
Pretty cool. Booger, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming by the show. Enjoy the draft week from today. We can't wait. Thank you so much.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
All right, there you go. There is Booger McFarland, and I want to react to some of that. I mean, his passion for Lautu is something we got to address. I mean, that's who he says the Seahawks should take at number 16. We've mentioned the name. We've talked about the risk. Brock did a draft profile on him. But should they go in that direction? Should it be Lautu? Are you willing to take the kind of risk to bring in a guy who was medically retired? That's next on Brock and Salk.